Sheldon Adelson, a longtime casino owner, one of the richest men in the world, and one of the most powerful donors in Republican politics, has died. He was 87 years old. Adelson created some of the most opulent casinos in the world, exemplified by his Venetian and Palazzo resorts on the Las Vegas Strip. We've talked to journalists who covered gaming about Adelson and his influence in Nevada and the world. First up, Molly Ball, national political reporter for Time magazine and a former Las Vegas journalist.
So, Molly, when you were a reporter here, what do you remember most about Adelson?
Well, at the time I left Nevada, which was 2009, Adelson was increasingly taking control over the Republican Party in Nevada. He had always sort of been a player in local politics, but it was just at the tail end of my time in Las Vegas that all of the Nevada Republican Party events started being held at the Venetian and the Palazzo, and Adelson really asserted control over all of their operations. He also became a bigger and bigger player in national Republican politics. It was in the 2008 cycle that he funded Freedom's Watch, which was his first play to really make a big impact all at once with a double-digit million investment in the Republican Party across the country. And then it was after I left that he became more of a player, obviously, in the media.
Now, here in Nevada, the state elected a Democratic legislature. Before that, the state legalized marijuana. Unions remained strong here. These are all things Adelson opposed. And Adelson is hugely involved in politics. But what's the scorecard here? How would you sum up his political operations in Nevada?
I think it's quite fair to question the effectiveness of Adelson's political operations. As you mentioned, he hasn't gotten a lot of the things that he wanted on policy, whether you're talking about on the state level or on the national level. Now, the big asterisk on that, of course, is the 2016 presidential election, where he stayed out of the presidential primary on the Republican side, despite some very intense efforts to court him as a donor by virtually all of the Republican candidates. But then when the general election rolled around, he was a big Trump donor and a big donor to the inaugural committee. And I think when you look at policy moves that have pleased him, such as the moving of the American embassy in Israel, those types of policies are a huge reward for the investment he's made on the issues that he cares about. And there's also, it seems to be, there's been some action on another issue he cares about, internet gambling as well.
So is it fair to say that his influence is stronger on the national, maybe international stage than it is in Nevada?
Well, I've been gone for a while, so I wouldn't want to characterize it when it comes to things like, the nitty-gritty of business regulation. And I know he was involved in the Arena deal, but I, to be totally frank, don't know a huge amount about that. So he certainly still had clout in local efforts. But on the national scene, I think, is where he directed a lot of his energies and where he does seem to have gotten some reward in the last few years.
Now, you mentioned his opposition to internet gambling. Some people would say that seemed designed to benefit his casino businesses. Other positions, like his support of Israel, look to be a little bit more personal. Taking that, how would you sort out his political legacy?
Yeah, Adelson's politics are really interesting. He's not a traditional conservative, not a traditional Republican in terms of towing the party line on all the issues. In fact, he's liberal on a lot of social issues, and he's said as much. His real passions throughout his political involvement were that he loved Israel and hated unions. And that's the genesis of all of his political action. He first started playing in politics at the county commission level when he was trying to keep the unions out of his casinos. He then became involved in national politics primarily because he cared about foreign policy and in particular cared about protecting Israel and steering American foreign policy in what he considered to be a pro-Israel direction. And then I would say there might be one third issue that you could say he was really passionate about, and that is that he hated marijuana. So he was a big donor against marijuana legalization efforts nationwide at a time when those efforts were really gaining steam, becoming more popular with the public, and where a lot of the traditional opposition to those types of measures had sort of fallen away. And then the internet gambling thing had come along in the past few years, and it was interesting because it sort of separated him from a lot of his fellows in the gaming community, and there were a lot of questions raised about his motivations and whether he was really trying to protect his own bottom line, but he always insisted that it was purely a moral cause for him.
We also talked with Howard Stutz, a longtime gaming reporter in Las Vegas and executive editor of CDC Gaming Reports.
Howard, Sheldon Adelson arrived in Nevada because his company owned what was once one of the biggest trade shows in Las Vegas called Comdex. How did he parlay that into becoming this casino king and one of the richest men in the world?
It was interesting with Comdex, and it was a huge computer trade show. He would lease the space from the Las Vegas Convention Center. Comdex would lease it for like 5 cents or 10 cents a square foot. And then he would turn around and release that to all the vendors for up to like $25, $30 a square foot. So figure out the markup on that. Comdex, you know, became the convention that everybody would come to. Now, the casino owners back in the 80s when Comdex was going forward, they would complain because the Comdex people would come into town and they would stay in the hotel rooms. They'd go to the show. They wouldn't gamble, eat at McDonald's, and then they'd leave. And so they would start jacking up the hotel room rates. And so Sheldon, at that time, he started in with this, you know, he's had a lot of fights with the LVCVA and the casino owners. And then he ended up buying the old Sands Casino, the old Rat Pack era Sands, for about $167 million. At the time, it was owned by Kirk Kerkorian. There was a lot of land associated with the Sands. And he said, I'm going to build my own convention center as a home for Comdex. Well, he's ended up selling Comdex, but he did build the convention center, the Sands Expo and Convention Center, is about 2 million square feet, largest privately owned convention center in the world. And that's how he started out here in Vegas. Then he decided, when he and Miriam married, his wife Miriam, when they married and they went on their honeymoon was to Venice. They talked about Venice, how beautiful it was, and that's why he decided to tear down the Sands Hotel and build the Venetian in its place.
And the Venetian, when it was built, it opened in 1999. What did it bring to the Strip that was new?
He actually did coin the phrase, the integrated resort. And what it was, it's not just a hotel casino, you know, with the conventions and whatever. It was a hotel, the casino, the large convention center, a shopping mall, and other entertainment. And that's what he called the integrated resort. And he coined that phrase, which is, and it's now commonplace. When Japan is pushing for casinos, they're not calling them casinos, they're calling them IRs, integrated resorts. So that was something he did. And he did bring that to Las Vegas.
He was at the forefront of a lot of this sort of gaming stuff. In Macau, he built the world's largest casino. He pioneered gambling in Singapore. Was he the first to see this huge market in Asia?
When China took over Macau from Portugal in 2000, they decided to expand gaming. It was a monopoly controlled by Stanley Ho. Las Vegas Sands was one of the companies that wanted a gaming license in Macau. They ended up getting a sub-concession with another company. And then he opened the first U.S.-owned casino in Macau, the Sands Macau. But then he started expanding, and the Chinese government took him out, showed him what is now the Cotai Strip. It was an area of reclaimed land. They did dredge up, reclaim all this land from the South China Sea. And it was between Cotai and Taipei. And he looked at that and he saw that as this could be a Las Vegas Strip, Asia's Las Vegas Strip. And he built the Venetian out there on Cotai, which still is, I think, or maybe at the time was the largest casino with 500,000 square feet of casino space. He built the convention center. He built a sports arena next to the Venetian. The shopping mall has condos. And he continued to add to Cotai. One of the funnier stories was back in 2005, I interviewed him about Cotai. And he went to see it. Said he had gone to Steve Wynn and said, Steve, you should come out here and join me in Cotai. Steve Wynn told him that was the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Now today, Wynn Resorts is on Cotai, MGM's on Cotai, other companies are on Cotai, and Macau is the largest gaming market in the world. Now, part of it was driven by Sheldon Adelson with his emphasis on turning the company into a Chinese company and building all he did in Macau. It was really his vision that he did see as Macau as a gold mine for the gaming industry.
Adelson reportedly used to say that he wasn't a rags-to-riches story. His family was too poor in some area near Boston to even have rags. In a city where everybody's larger than life, do you think that poverty, how he grew up, set him apart?
It drove him. It drove him for power obviously through his investments in the gaming industry and the wealth he made through the gaming industry, through Comdex, you know, and you know, that's, I think it drove him. That drove him to the point of why he was such a huge contributor to the Republican Party for power. The time I interviewed him in his office, like I said, 2005, so George W. Bush was president, there were multiple photos of him with George W. Bush, some in the at Bush's ranch in Texas on his wall. He loved to have models of his planes. Sands has a fleet of jets, and he had models of the planes up on his desk. He was very, I guess, both proud of his of what he achieved, but it made him a, you know, somewhat pugnacious and a fighter, and he didn't like criticism. It was my way or the highway with him. I think it did drive him, to having grown up poor and having been there.
What is his legacy in Vegas?
I give him credit for what he brought to the Strip with the convention center, what he built with between the Venetian and the Palazzo. I mean, it's a huge property. That's pretty much all he did, you know, but they really became an Asian company. 65% of their revenues came from Macau. They have the biggest, the most iconic casino in Singapore. They really are an Asian company.
So legacy here, two mega casinos?
Yeah, Sheldon's legacy are going to be those two properties and, you know, where their company goes from there.
He also had a lot of feuds over the years with the Culinary Union, the Monorail, Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, Envy Energy and its owner, Warren Buffett. He sued journalists, including our own John L. Smith. He lost that, but the fight bankrupted Smith. Did he have, when he was in these fights, strategic ends, or was he a petty man? Was he quick to fight?
I want to say he was just quick to fight. You just mentioned the LVCVA he had the fight with. He, you know, continued that forever. The Culinary, he wanted to open non-union, and he fought to open as a non-union property. He still has unions, not Culinary. He has, you know, there's some other unions there. And you mentioned the fuse with journalists. It wasn't just John L. It was
Wall Street Journal reporters.
Kate O'Keefe from the Wall Street Journal. The late Jeff Simpson from the Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas Review Journal. He sued Jeff. He didn't like something, that's how he was. I don't know if there's ever an end game. It's just he wants to win.
Speaking of journalism and journalists, when you were at the Las Vegas Review Journal, you found out and then wrote about how Adelson's family had secretly bought the RJ. Knowing Adelson had sued reporters, including your colleague John L. Smith, if you were scared.
It wasn't that I was scared. We were purchased December of 2015. Gatehouse announced that we were bought by a secret owner who didn't want to be revealed. When we found out the price, $140 million, because Gatehouse is a public company, they had to disclose the price. The person who bought the RJ didn't just overpay, they grossly overpaid for it. I mean, the RJ, we were a good regional newspaper, but you have to understand, Gatehouse acquired all of Stevens Media 9 months earlier for $106 million. You know, it's like 60-something large and small, medium-sized newspapers. And the turnaround sold the RJ for $140 million. So if it was somebody who wanted the RJ, our team of reporters, Jennifer Robeson, myself, Jim Wright, John L., Eric Hartley, James DeHaven, we were able to determine it was Sheldon, and we were right. We knew it was going to change the newspaper. You know, listen, he spent that much money on it. At some point, they were going to play with their new toy. The Adelsons, they thought we wouldn't unearth them as owners. They believed they bought it in secret. They could just run it in secret. When the guy who was their front man, this Michael Schroeder, comes in and tells us, you don't need to know who your owners are. They don't want you to know, just do your job. I mean, he just threw raw meat into a pack of lions. I mean, we set out to determine to prove who the owner was. I never thought I was going to be sued. I just thought I was going to be able to do my job. And I had a feeling I might be fired at some point. So that's why a lot of us left.
Having worked for the Adelson family, having covered Sheldon Adelson, having heard all these stories over decades of reporting in Vegas, final word, what do you feel about the man?
Boy, ambivalent. I always said I admire what he did with the gaming industry, self-made, what he did. But what he did with journalists, I don't like. So I have a very sour opinion about that. John L. wrote a great column that said that the Adelsons had every right to buy a newspaper, but they were absolutely the wrong people to own a newspaper because of their feuds with journalists and the type of people they were. And he was right about that. And so, I give Mr. Adelson, he'll go down in history, the credit of helping to create Macau. helping to transform Las Vegas. I give him that credit, but he'll have a legacy here, and we'll see what others write about him over the years.
That was Howard Stutz of CDC Gaming Reports. We also talked earlier with Molly Ball of Time Magazine about the death of Sheldon Adelson, worth an estimated $35 billion at the time of his death.